Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. How'd you like a job that pays about $100,000 a year? How about work as a principal of an urban public high school? Okay, the hours are a bit long, maybe twice what normal people work, and there is that stress dealing with students and teachers and parents and security and staff. But hey, there are openings. All across the country, public school principals are retiring or abandoning their jobs, and there's no great lineup to replace them. Last year, in New York City alone, 142 principal jobs were up for grabs. And they say it's going to get worse. In the next 5 years, 40% of school principals across the country are expected to retire. And there simply aren't that many people who want the jobs. Jonathan Schnurr is hoping to change that. He runs a nonprofit called New Leaders for New Schools. His mission is to attract principals from other fields, like business and the military. He wants to find people who can help turn around public education, even if it's only one school at a time. We'll meet Jonathan this hour and talk with a couple of principals, but we'd also like to hear from you. Is a good principal the key to a good school? Can you fix the principal problem, the shortage of good candidates, by searching elsewhere in the working world? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're starting today with Jonathan Schnurr. He's head of New Leaders for New Schools, joining us from our studios in New York. Hi, John.
Dick, thanks very much for having me on the show.
I understand that you spent a lot of time working on education issues during years you spent in the Clinton administration, and that's when you started zeroing in on school principals. What was your idea? What were you thinking?
That's right. When I was working on education policy for Dick Riley when he was Secretary of Education and in the Clinton administration, the White House, we saw a lot of schools across the country and a lot of research on schools across the country. And in every city, we found and I saw at least a small number of schools in urban areas that were terrific at helping kids from all backgrounds really achieve at high levels. And the common element that we typically saw and that I saw in these schools was not exactly the nature of the curriculum, was not exactly the nature of the reform, but was there a terrific principal leading that school who brought together the students, the teachers, parents, and the community around a really clear mission focused on helping all kids really achieve at high levels, which led to the insight, a basic one, not a brilliant one.
Yeah.
If great principals equal great schools, why not try to find and train great principals at scale for this country?
And so you take two inner city public schools, say within similar neighborhoods, you'd find that one of them had a better attitude, had a better performance, might even have students performing at a higher grade level. And pretty consistently, you'd find that in those better performing schools, you had a principal who was more highly regarded, what, by the students or by the staff or by the parents or everybody?
Well, that's right. In fact, the research shows that the schools tend to achieve at higher levels when they've got a quality principal, similar to the notion that you see at the classroom level. Kids achieve better in classrooms when you've got a great teacher. But the only way you get great teachers at across a whole school that stay there is really if you've got a great principal who is finding great teachers, coaching them, working with them, setting a tone and culture, which keeps great teachers in the school, attracts more good teachers there, and helps all the teachers rise to their highest levels of performance.
So give me a quick overview of what New Leaders for New Schools, your nonprofit, is actually setting out to do.
We're a nonprofit. We began in the summer of 2000, and we are aiming to create a national urban principal corps. We recruit extremely talented people who have the characteristics associated with high-performing principals. And one important piece here, half of our people, we find, come from within the school systems that we work, entrepreneurial, results-oriented teachers who want to broaden their impact beyond just one classroom level but take it to the whole school level. The other half come from outside of school systems, all have taught at some point. So they may have gone into the military, into business, but they combine that leadership experience outside of education with terrific teaching experience in education. The people that we find, we give very intensive training based on the best research we can find from across the country in educational leadership and in general management. And the new leaders who get selected, it's about 6% of our 2,600 applicants so far who've been selected get a full fellowship where they get certification, intensive training, a year-long residency under the best current principals we can find, and coaching from coaches on our team, not only in this year-long residency, but in the first 2 years of their principalships in urban public schools across the country.
And the money comes from where? Comes from Washington or the cities, school districts pony up for this? How does that work?
That's right. What's important is we've said, look, there are a lot of people out there who want to do this job, but we're asking them to devote their careers to this. We're not asking them to pay for it. So to make this possible, it's a private-public partnership. We partner with certain school districts. Right now, we work in Chicago, New York City, Washington, D.C., Memphis, and Oakland, California. We're looking at new cities all the time, like Baltimore, Philadelphia, New Orleans, and others are possibilities. Those school systems pay for a portion of this because they need good principals. And we've got some terrific corporations and foundations, like the Eli Broad Foundation based in Los Angeles, companies like Boeing and FedEx, a New Schools Venture Fund, a foundation in California. So it's really taking public and private funding to make it possible for terrific potential principals to invest their time and their heart and soul, but not their dollars, to become principal.
All right, let's you and I go for a walk down the hall to the actual office itself. We're joined on the line by Gail Baptiste. She is principal at PS 309 in Brooklyn, New York, and joining us on the phone. Gail, you've got about 1,000 students. Is that right?
I do. And can I just correct you, because there is a 309 in the district, but I'm PSMS 308.
I made that change. Thank you very much.
And I'm a pre-K through 8 school with, a little over 1,000 children.
And how is it going?
Well, how's it going? That's one of our buzzwords around here, how's it going? And another question we ask ourselves often in the midst of all the things that have to happen is, are we having fun yet? It's going great, because I love education. But I can tell you that the complexity of running a school is not easily described, and it's not easily replicated. And I definitely want to take my hat out to you, John, for what you're trying to do with your new leaders for new schools, because we definitely need the training. And many of us came in, cold feet. I came in with lots of experience. I came from a teaching background. I've been a guidance counselor. I've been an assistant principal. I worked in the district office. And even with all of that experience, 11 to 12 years down the line that I've been principal in this school, is still a daunting task. It's not just about instructional leadership. It's not just about supervising and evaluating teachers. It's about coordinating, an entire building, security offices, cafeteria staff, the school aides, the paraprofessionals, the support staff, my APs, my guidance counselors, my parent coordinator. And it's about getting everybody on the same page to, buy into my vision of engaging children and training them to be the best that they can be when they leave the confines
of
this.
But, Gail, how do you ever find time to talk to the kids after you go through that long list?
Listen, the kids are part of it. We have assemblies. As a matter of fact, I tried to make the meeting end at 11 so I could talk to you guys. I just had a meeting with no less than 15 sets of parents, with four of my 7th and 8th grade girls who were involved in altercation, to the point that it spilled out of the AP's office on the third floor down to the principal's office. So that's one opportunity that I have to, I call it eyeballing the kids.
Remind them. Tell me something, though, Gail, on the sort of burnout scale, where are you here? Are you counting the days to retirement?
You know what? I will be 55 May 29th, 2005, and I have 33 years. So May 30th, if I'm still doing this, it's because I want to. Definitely. Myself and everybody else that's from that baby boomer age, all of us from the 1950s that was born in 1950 will be 55 this year, and we talk about it every chance we get. We can go if we want to. Now, me, I guess I'm still enjoying it too much. And it's not that it's not daunting. It's not that it's not, seemingly impossible on some days, but I still find things that make me joyous.
What about John's plan to look outside the education system to find people?
I like John's plan, and I applaud John for the plan. I would caution you to make sure that the people that you've got helping you train these new folks that are coming from outside the system, at least that some of the people that are training came from inside the system, because this system is not an easy system to unravel, even when you're inside. Just the idea of how do you get your orders taken care of.
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Joe.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a Very important point. Two things I would say. One is, while we do look, again, half of our people come from outside the school systems mm-hmm. that we work with, we screen for a few things. We screen, one, does the person have the belief and the potential of every child, regardless of background, to excel academically? Okay. And people who take a real sense of moral responsibility and accountability, like you're saying, Gail, to help as adults in the school deliver on kids' potential. We look for people who really understand kids and teaching and instruction. That we look for people who've led adults, but if they've come from outside of education, like we've got two of our new leaders starting a new school in Washington, D.C. One was from a foundation and one was from the military and flew helicopters in Desert Storm. But they both were phenomenal teachers as well before or after those experiences. So we're looking for people with that teaching background as well. And then, as you say, Gail, the training includes intensive training, not only around instructional leadership, but also on how do you navigate all the operational challenges so you can make sure that those don't get in your way in school mm-hmm. systems. And every Absolutely. Single new leader has a full-time leadership coach, somebody who's been a terrific principal, typically in the school system that they're working in, who can visit their school regularly, give them feedback, and help give them lots of tips about how to navigate work in that school system. You're absolutely right, Gail, and we're trying hard to do that.
Yeah, I think that's the piece that, those of us that do this and do it well, and on most days I count that I do it well, we make it look easy. You know,
that's
we
right.
make it look seamless. We don't let you see us sweat.
How many teachers on your staff, Gail, have said to you, hey, are you going to quit in May? Because I'd really like to have your job.
Not too many. They do ask me, am I going to quit, though? Because they're all saying, you can't leave us, Dr. B. We're in the middle of, you just can't leave. You're not going. The rumors are you're going. And I'm saying, pay the rumors no mind. Change the rumor to I can go.
Gail, the numbers here don't really lie. I mean, the fact is that there are about 40% of the principals in U.S. public schools who are in the same position that you are, contemplating retirement, if not this year, sometime within the next 4 to 5 years. Is this the fix? Is looking outside the education area to find the talent that can do the job? Is that a way to solve the problem, or at least one way?
It's always better to have more than one way to skin the cat, so to speak. But I only caution, and again, I applaud those movements. I only caution that the movements recognize the complexity of what they're trying to do. We have a few of those kind of programs that are going on right here in New York City. And as a matter of fact, right now I have about three of my teachers that went through, I think they called it a leadership academy, mm-hmm. and who were actually placed as principals, and who actually have said to me, Dr. B., I learned more working in the school under you than I did in that academy. So I'm only cautioning that the academies need to dig below the surface to make sure that their folks are exposed to the stuff that's really going to happen to them. Well, how do you respond to, in this case, in New York City, I've got a community superintendent, a local instructional superintendent, and a regional superintendent that I'm under.
All right, Dr. B., Gail Baptiste, I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
Well,
thank
you for having me.
We'll talk to you on at the end of May and see where you are at the time. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join our conversation this hour. Call it the principal problem. Where are we going to find the principals to staff the public schools if, in fact, as many of them are feeling worn out and tired and burned out? The idea that John Schnur is talking about, going outside the education system to business, for example. Is that the way of doing it? How important is the principal to the school? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour. We're talking about filling those offices, the principal offices in the public schools right across the country. Many principals have the opportunity to retire in the next 5 years. It's quite clear that at all levels of public schools, and particularly in those tough schools in the urban areas, that cities and towns are having a hard, hard time finding people who want to do that work because of the hours, because of the stress, and perhaps because of the way that the job has changed. One way of looking at that is being explained to us on the program today by John Schnur. He's founder of New Leaders for New Schools. It's a program that is looking both inside and outside the education system, trying to pick the very best to put them in the principal's office and in hope hopes that that will, in fact, not only just fill the chair, but improve the school as well. 1-800-423-8255. That's your number to join us. Let's take our first call from Potsdam, New York. Matt's on the line. Hello, Matt.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Hello. I went to a rural, very rural school with a military principal.
How many students, Matt?
About 800 or 900, depending on the year.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm not going to mention any names or anything, but this man was the principal of this school for approximately 30 years. And he ruled this school with a complete iron hand. And it was just, he was a colonel in the military. And he carried a lot of what he learned in the military to dealing with troops under pressure, to dealing with students that were just having trouble in their everyday lives. He never once positively reinforced anything. It was always negative reinforcements to get results, I don't think you can do it.
Right.
To try to, almost force you to, say, well, I'll show you I can do it. Mm. And, in a lot of ways, that caused me and many, many, many other people over that 30-year period horrible problems with dealing with authority in the rest of our lives.
Do you remember, Matt, at which grade level this was hard for you to handle? Was that at the high school level when we're all kind of challenging authority anyway?
From about kindergarten on, kindergarten through 12th grade.
All right. John,
I'd love to comment on that.
Yeah.
That's a really important point that Matt's raised. Matt, I think you've actually identified one of the biggest problems in education that we're trying to solve. And let me be really clear about this, because I think you've alluded to it, which is you said that the way that you got the message in this school is as if kids couldn't do it. And the most important criteria that we screen people for is, do they believe in the potential of every child to excel academically and succeed? And ultimately, do we help them, among other things, instill a culture in the school where the expectations are high for every child, that every child from every background is expected with support and positive support and lots of good teaching to be able to achieve the highest levels of success. An example, we've got a new leader who's opened a school in East Oakland, California, that's serving very low-income kids in California. The expectation in this school is that every one of these kids from very low-income families, they're going to graduate from high school, be ready to go to college. And that's constantly reinforced. The credo in this school is work hard, get smart. The way to get smart and succeed isn't by being born just lucky enough to do that, and some kids have it and some don't, but if you work really hard and effectively with the right teaching, you can succeed. And we look for people who can do that, and we train our people to do that. I think you've identified a very important problem, Matt.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I saw it firsthand, and this man was absolutely brutal. Actually, to the point of, actually ruining people's lives. In 1969 or 70, when the Vietnam War was going on, one of my father's friends, who also had this man for a principal, didn't have his physical education credit. And this man told him that if he went to Vietnam and served his country, that he would get the physical education credit. And this poor man went to Vietnam, served, stepped on a mine, got shrapnel in his back, has a horrible debilitating injury for the rest of his life. And when he returned home to receive his credits, the principal told him, "What are you talking about? I never said that." And then this man retaliated ridiculously and was thrown in jail.
Matt, let's not pile too much responsibility on the poor principal. I think your point is well made, but it's a good time to bring in another guest for the program here, because the job of principal at the Chelsea High School in Massachusetts is one of the most challenging in this area. 1,400 students. School recently ranked as one of the most low performers among Boston area schools, and last year they did just what your school did. They hired a colonel from the Army with 23 years' experience as a leader. His name's Morton Orloff, and he's joining us on the line. Hello, Mr. Orloff.
Dick and John, it's a pleasure to join you.
You had a chance to listen to Matt's frustration there. I mean, part of it, I think, is tied up in the character of the man who was the principal in the school, and I won't ask you to defend that. But what I would like to hear is, you've been, what, now 4 or 5 months in the job after a career in the Army. How are you finding the transition?
Well, I'm loving it. And it is a great challenge. I think your previous guest touched on it. It's enormous complexity and responsibility. But it's all very familiar to me. I mean, it's not, there haven't been too many surprises. A lot of translation from the language of education to my own experiences, but
right.
The basic leadership and organizational requirements are familiar.
And what about the skeptics who were muttering when you started, gee, you can't get a soldier to take care of kids? Where's his experience?
Well, Dick, I don't know that they've stopped muttering necessarily.
Well, what do you say to them today then?
Well, I think the proof will be in the outcome ultimately, but I think that being a leader is being committed to the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Seen it through, whether it's for soldiers or whether it's for students. So, you know, I come here with a commitment to see it through for a positive outcome for our students. And I think that in terms of experience, I spent my career, I mean, I was a career infantryman, and one of the things that was always part of my life was that if you're not fighting, you're training. And training is very similar to education. And certainly at the principal's level, many of the same worries, again, that your previous guests outlined are worries and issues that I've already dealt with numerous times in different capacities in the Army.
I'm wondering, John, in the people that you have brought in through New Leaders, New Schools, whether or not you are constantly saying to someone who ran a corporation, you know, some of the skills are the same, or someone from the military to say, you know, try this. You may, in fact, be very good at it.
I think that's right. I think we tell people, and the good news is we are seeing a lot of people who are interested in taking on this job. We've had almost 3,000 applications for our first 150 fellowships. And we do tell people that being a principal draws heavily on skill, both educational knowledge and leadership, as well as more general leadership and management that can be acquired in very different contexts. So we tell people who have been leading in corporations or leading in the military or leading in schools with that kind of goal orientation that you were describing, sir, with that kind of management and leadership that can come from outside of education, when you can combine that in the same person with real knowledge of kids and instruction, is together what it takes. We all the time tell people who are great classroom teachers but aren't great leaders yet of adults, you know what, this may not be for you yet.
Mm-hmm.
We tell people from outside of education who may have terrific leadership experience but not yet any real educational experience, for us, you know, this isn't yet right for you. But the combination is just terrific.
Let's bring in another voice here from Philadelphia. Dan is joining us. Dan, I understand that you come from education. Is that right? You were a teacher?
I was a teacher for 6 years, in 3 years in East Oakland, California, and 3 years in San Francisco. So I'm familiar with those districts. I'm now a graduate student in education at the University of Pennsylvania, in fact, in leadership, for the specific reason of going back to become a principal and then possibly policymaker in schools. But my question is about education has a certain culture that is unto itself. It's not really like the business world, not really like the military world. It's very unique to education. And I wonder how you go about teaching these people who you want to become effective leaders in education about that culture, and how you get them to acquire the nuances and the specificity of that culture.
Let's start with Morton Orloff on that. You talked about it as learning a different language, but Dan's talking about a completely different culture. Did you find that?
Well, I think that the culture does stand out as distinct, but I think any professional culture there would be some of that, and certainly I have felt it in making the transition. Of course, coming from the Army, that's a unique culture. But to be honest, though, good communication skills, good observation skills will help work through it. And of course, I have my secret weapon, and that's my wife, who happens to be a teacher.
who's whispering in your ear. But tell me something. You order a soldier. You know, you say, son, you're going up the hill. And he says no. And you say, as a matter of fact, you're in the Army. I'm in charge of you. You're going up the hill. We're not arguing about it. At the education level, if I'm just sort of trying to imagine a set of circumstances that illustrates what Dan's talking about, you have to negotiate that a little more with an 11th grade student who's saying, I'm not showing up for physics today. I just don't want to.
You're absolutely right. Different tools. The tools available to an Army commander are distinctly different than the tools available to a principal. And so therefore, you do have to, you know, stretch yourself, and you're going to use a wider array of of skills, be it negotiation or connecting to the student. But I would tell you, Dick, that you know, the best order I ever gave in the Army was one that a day or two later never had my fingerprints on it. In other words, it wasn't because the colonel said so.
Yeah.
It was because, hey, that's a good idea and we want to do it. Those are always the best types of orders. And I would say the same is true in a high school.
That it's more about inspiring people to want to do something than it is into bludgeoning them into doing it against their will, right?
Yes, absolutely.
John, is that sort of the way that you would cast this kind of leadership question that we're talking about?
I think that's right. I mean, if you look at you need the educational experience in leadership, so you know kids and instruction, but B, you need this leadership of ability to lead adults. Part of leading adults absolutely is a sense of distributing leadership and engaging individuals in a team so that they feel and are very invested in creating the strategies to achieve success, in this case for kids, while as a principal, for sure, having the backbone and making sure you're instilling the backbone in your team that for certain core values and certain goals that there won't be compromises. But the compromises are kind of enforced by the team because of the culture you build in the team more than they are than by you as an individual. I wanted on the question from the listener in Philadelphia, I think he's absolutely right in asking how does somebody acquire the experience to succeed within the context of an urban school system, and a couple things. One is all of our people have had at least 2 years of teaching experience. The median is about 5 years. Even if they've been in the military, they've combined that with teaching experience. But two, we think it's absolutely critical that this year-long residency, we think you learn a lot in the classroom, in the university classroom, and we design terrific classes with a lot of help. And we, in fact, were at the University of Pennsylvania this summer, and we were grateful for their help. But secondly, this year-long full-time residency, where you are taking responsibility for leading a portion of a school, getting feedback from a mentor principal like somebody like Gail, getting feedback from leaders and coaches on our team, and understanding the consequences of how you lead in a school, in the same school system where you lead as a principal, we think is absolutely critical to building on your teaching experience to understand what it takes to lead within the context of a particular school system.
Dan, are we talking you into this at all?
No, I appreciate the explanation of it. I think it's actually it's what I would have suggested. I think it's right up the alley of what needs to be done. I think that part of the problem is that you look at New York's $1 million per person project on creating new principals, and it's taking people and throwing them right into the system and not giving them an opportunity to get their feet wet before they're completely responsible. And I think John's point on giving them sort of residency and being in a school where they're not wholly responsible for the entire school's outcome and just a portion of it is an opportunity to learn and get the experience while learning.
I want to go back, if I can, here to Morton Orloff, because I remember Mort, early on in your time, there was a newspaper story written about your assuming the principal job at Chelsea High School, and there was something in there about, you know, taking your lunch into the same room where the teachers were eating lunch and discovering only by doing that you were breaking a rule. What happened there?
Well, you mean after the knockdown drag out I had with my wife? No, it was sort of counterintuitive to me in my experience in the Army, where you've got to focus on building teams. Though, in each contract is different where unions are involved. Some are very explicit around the Boston area. Some are less explicit, but the building rep made a point that they'd prefer not to have us there on a regular basis. And I said that I thought that wasn't heading the direction that I wanted to head with, but I recognized the language of the contract and would respect that. And that respect that at this point, anyhow, there is this gap in the culture.
I just wonder whether or not that gap in the culture makes it really difficult to reach that team level that John was talking about, Mort.
Well, that is a challenge, and I think it's a challenge because we have a very flat organization here. In the Army, you get promoted based on potential, not as a reward. Your potential to serve at the next higher level, and you're also trained to kind of instinctively assume duties at the next level, to look up and say, okay, what skill sets and what do I need to be able
right.
to do in the event that Dick is not here tomorrow. But in education, it's remarkably flat. I mean, I have nearly 140 teachers, and then there are four administrators. And so that growth and development. Well, certainly there is growth and development, but it's not necessarily leadership growth and development that's taking place.
Right.
And that, I think that's a challenge that for the you know, broader education community.
Working from within, indeed. Let's go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Anna's joining us from there. Hi, Anna.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wonderful program. I highly respect the work that you're doing for this program to find principals. I had a question. There was I'm alluding to a show that was on recently. I'm not a program that was talking to teachers that were somewhat disillusioned with their schools that had been very, very progressive, and because of pressures on principals to make schools more standardized and programs more standardized, they actually had to drop a lot of their programs that they were doing, ways of teaching students, report cards that they had that were specialized to make the schools more standard with others, and it actually ended up dropping the quality of schools. And it's a question if you have components in your training of your principals or components where you actually are working with revolutionizing the district's perspective on what schools are allowed to do and the freedom they're allowed to have.
Anna, let me just stop you there. I'm going to put that question to John in just a couple of minutes, but we're close to a break, and so perhaps just a quick word from Mort on how those standardization of the school works either for you or against you in the principal's job. Is it a problem?
Well, obviously some level of standardization is necessary. As you pointed out in your opening, I have 1,400 students, about 140 teachers and so forth. So there, just from a practical standpoint, there has to be some standardization. The other part of that is the teachers. The teachers carry an enormous load. They are the center of gravity. You can't be successful without great teachers, and I think John touched on that point. And so while they need to have the flexibility to teach appropriately, we also have to build systems that are efficient and support them. Otherwise, our teachers are going to burn out.
Mort, I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Dick.
Mort Norloff is in his first year as principal of Chelsea High School after 23 years in the U.S. Army, retiring as colonel. We're talking about finding principals and what it is, just exactly how much the principal matters in setting the character of the school, inspiring teachers, and leading children. We're going to talk a little bit more with John Schnur when we come back right after the break about the effect of standardization. But we'd like to hear your thoughts on the subject. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. My guest this hour is Jonathan Schnur. 4 years ago, he founded New Leaders for New Schools, a program, in fact, the largest nonprofit organization in the country, recruiting and training urban principals, trying to fill the gaps of all the people who are expected to leave in the next 4 to 5 years. And we're talking about the importance of the principal in the public schools on this hour. Our telephone number for you to join us is 1-800-423-TALK. John, I did want to take Anna's point about standardized testing and hear from you on that, because the more I hear from principals on that, the more I hear that No Child Left Behind, saps the creativity and adds stress and gets them rated as a failing school, particularly when there are no resources there. Is it working against what it is you're trying to do?
Well, Anna's question, Anna from North Carolina's question, was just terrific in terms of what are the implications of this effort to standardize on schools and principals, and what are we trying to do about it? We look for people around the country who want to make a big impact in their schools and together with us to be part of a movement to transform education across the country, so that we not only recruit and train people, but we target particular cities. Right now, New York, Chicago, D.C., Oakland, and Memphis, but we'll do more. And when we go into a city at this point, we say that if you would like us to bring this critical mass of terrific principals to help transform your whole school system, one of the things that we'd like you as a district to do is to agree to give good leaders, people who demonstrate they're capable of good leadership, far more autonomy to make decisions in those schools around curriculum, around budget, around operations, and including an agreement we struck in Memphis last year around staffing, greater latitude to hire your own staff, to move staff out more easily, so that you can be held accountable for the same goals in the end in terms of student success, but be given lots of autonomy and flexibility to find the right way to do that.
But
and
doesn't
we
the standardization
that's a very important combination.
Doesn't the standardization work against that kind of creativity and latitude that you want the principal to have?
It absolutely can. So what our goal in the cities that we work in is to say, you know, that's just terrific to be sure that there's accountability for certain goals and measures of success. Test scores are one important part of that because we believe all kids ought to be able to read and write and do math at basic levels, but they're hardly the only element. There's no question that this obsessive focus just on Scantron standardized test scores can be very destructive. We try to train our new leaders to help kids do well on tests and on so much more and negotiate agreements where they've got the flexibility they need to help kids achieve in lots of ways, but including making terrific progress on these tests of things like reading, writing, and math. But it's a real challenge in education.
I mean, it's a bit of a you need them and you don't want them at the same time, because 4 or 5 years from now, when you're trying to make the case that these inspiring new principals are in fact making a difference in the school, one of the few ways that you have of demonstrating that is the number of kids who are studying at grade level, or how they're doing on the test scores, or the number of students who are going on to college, right?
Absolutely. So, in fact, we have an external evaluation that's going to be looking, and we held ourselves accountable for kids' progress on a number of measures, including test scores. But in our training, what we say is, look, the best way to help kids do well academically on tests, to get into college, to stay in college, isn't doing test prep. I mean, sometimes people make the mistake of thinking the best way to help get that result is focusing in a myopic, narrow way on test and test prep. And we say if we work together and you as a principal work with your teachers to give kids a deep educational and instructional experience that draws on their potential and helps them excel academically broadly, there are ways of doing that that you can make sure along the way they make the progress that we all need and our kids need to make on these standardized tests too. It's hard work, but it can be done.
Let's go to Bristol, Rhode Island. Mildred's joining us from there. Hi, Mildred. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I wanted to say that years ago, I did teach full-time and then later on subbed in inner-city Detroit, and you couldn't find a harder place to sub. And you could walk in the building. The minute you walked in the building, you knew whether you had a good principal or not. And one example that really stood out was that two schools, three blocks apart, in one school, the principal walked around with a baseball bat in the back, holding the baseball bat in his hands.
Are you serious?
He
carried that around the hallways.
He sure did. And those kids walked in straight lines, not a word. And you could feel between classes, and you could feel the resentment and fear and hostility. And, you know, you almost had like a prison break or something like that simmering. And then there was another school three blocks away, and the Board of Education had seen fit to make a brand-new, beautiful, one-level school just like I had left in the suburbs. And they had a principal who duplicated my school in the suburbs. You could walk in the building, and I felt like I was back in my great school with the best principal in the world. And he did it by himself. You could see the teamwork. The kids had discipline, self-discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about the learning, but the classroom was easy. And at the first classroom,
Let me ask you a question, though, if I can, Mildred, because whenever I get into a conversation about education and what works and what doesn't, there is this sort of standard checklist of there's not enough money, or the teachers, have been there too long, or, you know, the principal does make. Are you saying that you got to start with the principal? That's.
Yeah, I sure do. You have to. I think you have to have a person who is very. Very experienced in pulling a team together. These guys had experience in education and education degrees. I don't know anything about bringing people in from the outside, but they knew kids. They knew how to pull us together. You know, my school where I taught, we were a team, and we felt such loyalty to the principal, whose name was Jim Otto. If anybody's listening, he's wonderful.
Let me, if I can, stop you there, Mildred, and ask John Schnurr back in, because, I mean, I think what Mildred's talking about is precisely the observation that you made in your decision to say, hey, start here, fix the principal problem.
That's absolutely right. Her comment about the baseball bat. I mean, look, baseball bats are for baseball coaches and baseball players. The principal can absolutely play a role ensuring good discipline in the school, but it's not by carrying a baseball bat around. She made a very important point that she saw incredible self-discipline and perseverance among these kids in one of these schools. There's research showing that there is a higher correlation between a student's level of self-discipline and perseverance and belief in their capacity to succeed and academic success than there is between so-called IQ and intelligence and academic success. Instilling that quality in students in a tough but very positive way is absolutely critical. And while a principal can't do it alone, it's really hard to imagine the kind of transformation we're making in schools across the country without that kind of results-oriented principal.
To Burlington, Vermont next. Jim is with us. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'd like to just like to congratulate John on such a valuable service. I'm a former principal and now do in recruiting for schools, online recruiting for teachers and principals, and we see the same small pool of candidates for administrative principal positions. And I wondered if John would agree that the success for these people that we're training, whether it be the military, business, or education, really boils down to developing good relationships with people and having that skill. And how do you train people and develop that in people?
Well, two important points. One is that many school systems have suffered from a small pool of candidates. And I would say the good news is that if we can get the word out broadly, that we are seeing that there are a lot of people across the country who, given the opportunity to have this kind of training and this kind of community and this kind of free fellowship to become a principal, that a lot of people want to. I just have to mention for anybody who is interested, you ought to think about this job. You ought to think about nominating somebody you know for this job. You ought to think about applying yourself. You can find out more about New Leaders for New Schools or even apply online by our March deadline by going to our website, which is www.nlns.org, www.nlns for New Leaders, New Schools.org. I think there are a lot of people out there who do want to do this job if we can get the word out to them.
Your
point about relationship building, I just think it's very important that we try hard to train people for that. I can discuss that more if we've got time.
We'll have a link, actually, to the site. But I want to go back to Jim as a former principal here.
Yes.
Did you ever figure out, Jim, why it is that there aren't more teachers, more inspired to move beyond the classroom into the principal's office? Is it because they see at the principal's level they lose touch with the kids? Is it because of the stress, the long hours? What's your own experience?
I think, I think some people enjoy the classroom and just never would want to become principal. I think,
and they shouldn't be punished for that, right?
No, exactly. No, I think we have
absolutely
to find ways for them to grow in the position they're in. The principalship, I think, is in a squeeze. As Gail pointed out earlier, she's got this central office and a lot of people above that you deal with, and then you're in this squeeze with the other population, the students, the teachers. And quite honestly, as compensation has improved for teachers, teachers look at the position of the principalship and look at the compensation, the hours, and I think they think, wait a minute.
I'm doing just fine with the paycheck that I'm getting now?
Exactly. Yeah. And even many principals who I know, I mean, I left, but I loved the job, have gone back to the classroom.
Jim, I want to thank you for your call and jump straight across to Jefferson County, Kentucky, because James is joining us. And James, you are also a retired principal. Is that right?
That is correct.
Did you leave in desperation, all burned out, carried out of the office by your colleagues?
Well, I did leave after 14 years in the principalship. I had started the principalship under court-ordered busing in 1975.
Huh.
And obviously today in 2004, things are much different than they were in 1975. But the point that I wanted to make was I've heard a lot of comments about leadership and how you build a team. I don't believe that you can build a team and build leadership in the school without getting into the harness with your teachers. If you try to stand outside the ring and lead with a bullwhip or with loud words or threats or ultimatums, you're just simply not going to get the job done today.
Can you give me an example of something that illustrates that, James? Because earlier on the program, we were talking with Mort Orloff, who went, you know, I it's hard because the teachers' union doesn't really want me that close to the teachers. So what's an example of getting into the harness, as you describe it?
Well, one of the things that I did when I first went to Southern High School in Louisville, Kentucky, in 1975, I came into a school where there were known problems, in other words, I was sort of programmed coming in from the superintendents and others, and I knew what some of the problems were, but the first thing I did was I went into the, got the teachers all together, and I said, and this was in March of 75, near the end of the school year, and I said, we've got problems here we need to work on, but I want to know what you think the problems are. Hmm. And those are the ones that I want to work on right now. And lo and behold, they opened up, and they had a tradition there of water fighting at the end of the school year for seniors. And the morning that the seniors came for their last day of school, I had 110 teachers on faculty. I probably had 90 teachers down in the office wanting to get out there in the parking lot and help me get that situation under control. So from
that's
that day forth,
terrific.
You know, with court-ordered busing, et cetera, we realized that we needed each other.
Let me stop you if I can there, James. That's just such a simple and basic lesson in respect, John. I mean, respecting the teachers that you work with.
Absolutely. I mean, the good leaders that we see and the good principals we see, first, they know this is a very hard job. This job is not for the faint of heart. You need, as a principal, to find a way to generate real respect, to listen carefully, but then have backbone to push for the kinds of things that you need. And part of that, as James was saying, it is going into classrooms every day. At the beginning of the show, you said in a few years, there's a risk that when people go to the principal's office that the principal won't be there. Well, one risk is that the principals will all have retired and we won't have replaced them. But the good thing is that the good principals actually aren't in their office a lot because they're out in the classroom, they're working with teachers, they're observing what's going on, they're giving feedback to teachers, they're working with students, generating respect, but also really giving direct good feedback to help everybody maximize their potential. And that's really hard work.
And I think that you're onto something, because just in the day or so that we were, you know, planning this and a lot of people were able to sort of pinpoint their principal and say, I remember him. I remember her. This is somebody that matters. John, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
John Schnur, founder of New Leaders for New Schools. It's a nonprofit organization recruiting and training principals to work in urban public schools. We will have a link to their website on our website. We are at theconnection.org. We also had with us on the program Gail Baptiste, principal of Public School 308 in Brooklyn, and Morton Orloff, principal of Chelsea High School in Massachusetts. Our program is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.